Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The smartest guys around are about to break it down like they won the game of Miller Times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor, no way to
Thursday.
Yes, I was like, guys, should we play the know-it-alls theme music? I mean, it's not after the episode, but it's Steven is here. I feel like that's your theme song.
Oh, that's nice. It's our theme song.
Our theme song. Okay.
How was Marianne? How late did the podcast go?
Oh, probably about an hour after the episode. Oh, probably still like 12:30-ish.
Well, so did was Marianne okay with that?
She's okay catch with everything. she's good. I mean, she, like us, is, you know, I think probably like early to bed, early to rise.
She likes a long podcast.
She likes a long podcast, but not super late at night. Anyway, but here we are, Stephen, the day after the Survivor 44 finale, when a lot to unpack. We have a lot of questions from our listeners here today. We're also live. I'm in the midst of doing also Survivor exit press this morning. At this hour, I have spoken to four of the final five players in the game. I still have an interview to do with Lauren this afternoon. Wow.
And Lauren, there's a Lauren on this season.
Yes, of course. Our fifth place finisher. Of course, you say the most important player of the season tends to be the fifth place boot. And so
I don't think I say that, but it does seem to be like people are saying that. You know, it is a big, it's like the last person you can vote out. So, of course, it's a big elimination.
It does tend to eat up like a very meaty vote out in terms of like the way that the finale is structured. It tends to be like we get like almost like an hour on the fifth place finisher in these the way that these finale, and then we go right into the final four immunity challenge.
Right.
But Steven, so it's been a busy day. Of course, the big highlight this morning, if you have
talking to me,
of course. Wow, this is the afternoon. But I got to be a part of something that I have never done before. But I got to be a part of the SIA Award this season.
Wow. Wow. So tell me what happened.
Yeah, I was on the line with Carolyn, and we were having we had a great conversation. And towards the end of the conversation, I was told that there was another person that was going to be entering the Zoom call. And it was a surprise to me and to Carolyn that SIA just showed up to award Carolyn $100,000.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing. And then you asked me to go on after Sia. That seems a little, I guess you could say Sia is my opening act.
It's been a few hours after.
Yeah.
Okay. But I was like, well, should I like throw in like $50 for Carolyn for me?
Caught up in the spirit of the moment.
Yeah, well, it's like, well, maybe Sia will give the best podcaster award also today.
You should have mentioned, you know, like I've got a lot of things going on in my life too. You know, I've overcome some tragedies.
Yeah. But no, really well deserved for Carolyn. And Carolyn,
I was third place.
Carolyn, you know, had a great reaction to it all. So that interview is up. We'll be rolling out the videos of our interviews that we've done throughout the day, and then I'll have, once I add that Lauren interview coming up this afternoon, then we'll release the podcast version of all five of the exit interviews. Just spoke to Jam Jam a few minutes before we did this one, and Jam Jam was great. Spoke to Heidi and Carson as well today, this morning. So it's been really, really great. And of course, as Stephen mentioned, Marianne last night on the proper know-it-alls on Wednesday night. But Stephen, so
this
many
is
people
the improper know-it-alls.
Yeah, this is like the off-schedule know-it-alls for sure.
So you're coming in with a lot more context than I am, because like typically my ignorance, you know, is fine because I'm podcasting right after the episode. But now, you know, like you got all the like extra details.
Sure, but synthesize. What we don't know is how you felt about everything.
That's the one thing that we're missing. Well, the one missing piece of the puzzle.
That's the appeal here. You make it seem like that you haven't been you know, doing this for 12 years now. That people want to hear your takes on it and.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I loved it, obviously. I was a Yam stan, and you know, that was something I was playing a little bit close to the chest, because you know, to say publicly on Twitter that you were standing. Well, just that you were not rooting for Carolyn could really lead to a backlash. And I really liked Carolyn. I really was like, I would have been very happy with a Carolyn win. She was a super fun player. I think like a great character and like, you know, an iconic Survivor character, one we'll remember forever. Sounds like a eulogy. No, but I mean, like, you know, she's like really, but like truly like a standout character. But I loved Yam Yam was the guy, you know, after Matt Blankenship left, Yam Yam was the guy, like, Jam Jam was the guy. Jam Jam was the guy closest to my heart.
Yeah. So I guess great job by Jam Jam. Got the sense, you know, that it seemed that there was Carolyn felt like that she did not do a great job at the final tribal council. I've said I didn't really notice that in the episode.
Yeah, I mean, just so I'm like very curious, because I saw a lot of commentary about how great the final tribal was. And I did think that was the case. It seemed like everyone kind of had an opportunity to, you know, present their game, present their perspective, present their challenges, present how inspiring they were across all facets of life. But I didn't necessarily feel like, I don't know, I didn't feel like anyone like had this, I mean, other than Jam Jam, and I did think Heidi kind of like, you know, I don't know, did Carolyn, you know, she said like what was hard for her. She said, you know, some of the challenges she overcame. I don't know if she, at least from what we saw, kind of gave that same narrative that Jam Jam did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, Franny said it, you know, in her, you know, in her remarks and the reunion,
the after show. Yeah.
After show, you know, that Jam Jam was the one to really present kind of like a vision for like the strategy of what happened. Mm-hmm. You know, like he had a story that explained his understanding of the strategy and like how he fit into it. And which is really interesting, because like that's like very similar to what people were saying about Gabler last season. It was like he was kind of presenting a totalizing narrative of like how he understood the strategy and his place in it. And I do kind of think that like that might be the metric from like, now.
Yeah, I wonder if it's just the way that we read the final tribal councils. Are we just going off of like the score and like how the music, or like what the jury, like is the jury laughing a lot? Like, is that sort of like, are we like, is that sort of the metrics that we are grading these final tribal council performances against? Or does somebody need to be bombing for us to really take away, oh, somebody's doing really well? Because I felt like that. To me, it seemed like everybody did a pretty good job.
Yeah, I thought they all did a great job. I mean, you know, I think Heidi could have, I think Heidi could have done a little bit better in terms of like the challenges of playing from the bottom, you know, in a way where, because it seemed like, it did seem like Heidi was sort of, you know, fighting a losing battle other than for, and of course she came in second rather than lost, but, mm-hmm. you know, other than Danny's vote, which seemed, you know, to be fair, he might not have voted for his mother, but he did seem pretty committed to the idea of voting for Heidi.
But he might have voted for Carson against a clone of himself.
Yeah. Well, that's something I want to talk to you about later. I'm curious what you think. Maybe I'm sure you talked about this with Marianne about whether Carson would have beaten the field there. And mm-hmm. I kind of think yes, right? I mean, that's my read.
I think it's up for grabs. I think that when Mike Bloom and I went through this, I came into the week thinking not. And then Mike Bloom and I went through the like all of the potential jury votes and then realized that actually there was like a pretty good chance that Carson could. When I spoke with Jam Jam this morning, he felt like that he was going to be able to beat Carson. So it's one of those things I feel like that we'll never get a clear answer on.
Yeah. But I think, I mean, maybe Jam Jam could have beaten Carson, but I do think, you know, certainly, I mean, I thought that mm-hmm. Carson could beat Carolyn, you know, Carson could beat Heidi, and that he was, you know, one of the big threats. And he, you know, obviously had these extreme relationships. You know, I think he would have been able to articulate his strategy extremely well, mm-hmm. You know, and he really did seem to play the middle, maybe as much as, if not more than Jam Jam did. So I do think he could have had a very strong
Yeah, I think for Carolyn, you know, being part of the Tika 3 was a blessing and a curse, because I feel like that against like less colorful competition in the final three, I think that she would have had more of a chance to pop in the final tribal council and really stand out. But the problem with being like close allies with Jam Jam is that, you know, Jam Jam is, you know, I think that Carolyn is just an all like one of the all time like biggest personalities we've ever had on the show. But Jam Jam is like not far off in terms of being just like one of the all time biggest personalities. And so like I think against, you know, maybe Heidi, maybe, you know, maybe somebody else that wasn't going to who really like went to the, you know, extent to like not really try to like show their personality as much. I think that might have been a better comparison for Carolyn to go up against in the final tribal council.
Well, let me ask you this. And as you speak, I'm going to react as Carson did during final tribal to give you the okays and the go aheads. Who do you think like Carolyn could have beaten? Because I think that she was fighting, and I've said all season, you know, I think Carolyn's playing a very strong game, but I think she's not getting the credit from the other players. And I did kind of think that that was manifested in a lot of the commentary we saw. I mean, I remember there's a confessional from Lauren right after Carolyn revealed what, you know, her idol play, where she was like, yeah, I mean, Carolyn seems like she's all over the place, but I guess she's playing a really good game. You know, and I think that kind of sense, I think a lot of like the extraneous Carolyn of it all, you know, which she did a great job of owning and saying, like, I can be this and I can be strategic. Mm-hmm. I think that just like tapped into this,
yeah,
you know, this sort of archetypal dismissal, you know, spot for a lot of the other cast members, where all of the screams and the, you know, the goofiness and then the, you know, and the emotion which we loved as viewers and which, you know, made her such a unique, wonderful character. I think that would be a very hard thing for her to overcome from a jury perspective. And it's like, who do you blame there? Do you blame Carolyn for not, you know, game botting it up for the jury, or do you blame the jury for not, you know, seeing the gamer in the Carolyn?
Well, I think that there's a ton of different circumstances and reasons that go into it. And I think that part of it is, what is that?
Yeah, I'm doing Carson.
Oh, okay. Oh, you're coaching me through it. Yeah. So I think that I don't think that we've talked about this very much, that I think that, you know, had Carolyn gotten to the final three as not part of an alliance, like as sort of like an outsider against, there was like, let's say hypothetically, like Ratu or Sokka had basically like whittled it all down and Carolyn was sort of like the last person standing from her group. I think that type of game where, and this was kind of like what Gabler was able to like point to a little bit of like, hey, like you all like didn't worry about me. You know, I was able to avoid getting picked off. You didn't think I was a threat. And guess what? I am. I'm here. And I'm, but as part of like working so closely with Jam Jam and Carson, like I feel like that maybe that, and I think there's a lot of reasons for this, that maybe, you know, she was looked at as being part of the group. She wasn't always given credit for the moves that the group made, and especially be having another member of the group in the finals with her. I don't think that there was like too much of a lane left there with her. Like, I feel like that even if it wasn't even her by her direction, had she just been left with like sitting in the end with, say, like Danny and Heidi, or, you know, Jamie and Lauren, or like members of like two other members of Ratu, I feel like that would have been a good example for her then. Because hypothetically, you have Carson and Jam Jam on the jury for her, like also helping like make her case. So I just think that for the type of player that she is, like, I feel like it's hard for that game to shine in an alliance.
Yeah. I mean, and to be fair, like Carson and Jam Jam were moving back and forth, you know, more than Carolyn was, right? Carolyn was left out of votes. Like, Carson and Jam Jam were working more closely with the Ratus, you know, who were those key end game jurors. You know, you really, it's like they had better relationships with Lauren and with Jamie. I mean, there was this sort of weird moment tonight, like right for the Lauren vote, where Lauren was like, I didn't have a plan with Carolyn. And Carolyn was like, wait, what? Like, we just made a plan. And we saw them make a plan.
Yeah.
But for Lauren, it didn't feel like a real plan. You know, maybe she felt that it was, didn't, you know, you kind of have to invest a lot of energy in those fake plans to really sell them. And who knows? Like, maybe there just wasn't that relationship between Lauren and Carolyn. Maybe Carolyn didn't invest that energy in that moment. You know, maybe it was just Lauren's, you know, read on things. But for whatever reason, she didn't feel like it was a real fake plan, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. How about the big move that Heidi made from a Wednesday night, Stephen? Well, what's your reaction to this?
Well, it is so interesting, right? I mean, I saw some people on Twitter saying, if Heidi loses having made this big move, like, maybe we can like put an end to this narrative that you kind of have to make this move. Because like last, you know, season, we're all saying, oh, you've got to, you know, people were like, weren't people like critiquing Cassidy for, yeah, they were for not doing that and not eliminating Jessie herself and for putting Gabler in. And this time,
there were members like, of the jury that said they felt like that one of the reasons they cited for not voting for Cassidy was they felt like that she needed to do this move and she didn't.
Right. And Heidi, you know, good on her for having this extremely accurate perception of her own game, thought like, hey, I don't have this resume that these other people, I need to do this move. She does it and it doesn't really matter, right? She gets the vote she probably would have gotten anyway. And I do think, and I just tweeted this, that, you know, the jury is going to vote for who they want to vote for, and then they're going to come up with reasons after the fact for why.
I said the same thing last night. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, they want, you know, they wanted to vote for Gabler and they didn't, but like, so they were like, you know what, you should have done this fire move. And then
juries be gaslighting, Stephen.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I mean, they're going to tell you why you should have done one move or why the move you made didn't matter anyway, or why, you know, because like, if you just, it all comes down to who they want to vote for.
Then I would have voted for you, but you didn't do the thing. So
yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think it comes down to, I mean, honestly, the best thing I've ever heard about, you know, in terms of how to win over the jury was just, you know, JT said, you have to make the jury feel good about voting for you. And like, that's it. You know, you have to like make them, which is, you know, so impossibly hard and yet so straightforward. It's like not about, you know, you got to have like, obviously you have to have enough moves. You have to have enough control. You have to have done enough, but ultimately it's about making them want to vote for you. And, you know, there was a lot of commentary too, you know, about, well, it's always like the funniest player seems to win. And that's probably true. You know, there's probably a lot of rationale to that. The person who's like most connected to the other people, who makes them laugh, who they feel like a nice personal warmth for, they are going to want to find a reason for that person to win. And if like you can't present that reason, then maybe they won't vote for you. But you just have to give them a thread. You know, it's like with Chris Underwood is like the perfect example in season 39. You know, like these people are, I'm sorry, season 38. There was no season 39. almost acknowledged the existence of season 39. You know, he did almost nothing in the game, but like they come out of the game and say like, well, here's our reason that we want to vote for you anyway. And it's because you did all these things, you know, even if you weren't in the game for 80% of the game. Mm-hmm. So I do think that there's a lot of that.
Yeah. All right. So what can a future player take away from all of this in terms of
be funny?
Keep your social game like top of mind, like, and keep everybody liking you, and just get to the end because it's a popularity contest. Is that really what it comes to? And all of the resume talk is really just made up.
Well, yeah, I mean, I mentioned this tweet from this person. I think her handle is Idle Half or something, a couple of weeks ago, where she was like, the game is so chaotic and so random now that, like, really what you need to do is just, like, be super nice to everyone, be, like, super, like, friendly, make sure your relationships are super strong, and then hopefully when all, like, the random, like, buzzers and, like, switches hit, like, you're the one standing there at the end and you get the jury votes. Mm-hmm. And I think there's, like, a lot of truth to that. Like, you can't play a controlling game anymore like you used to, both because of the structure of the game now with how much randomness there is, and because the players are much more savvy now, you know, like they see the person who is playing that game and they eliminate them.
Yeah.
And so I think just like, you gotta just do like enough along the way and be really nice to everybody and be funny.
Yeah. It's a game of attrition basically. Yeah. And you know, all these people are going to go out and then the jury will just ultimately end up voting for the person that they have the warmest feelings towards, that they that also like hasn't like pissed them off, which I think those two things go hand in hand. And this is, you know, not in any way to diminish any of the winners of the last couple seasons, but it does seem like that's what it comes down to more so than like, okay, well, you know, explain to me like bring your resume to the final tribal council.
And self-awareness is the other thing, right? Like you have to have like a real, I mean, although I did think that Heidi had good self-awareness. I mean, they all had great self-awareness. That was the other thing. Like, you know, Carolyn was extremely aware of the perception of her. And Heidi too, she was saying, you know, people, you know, I lost the numbers. People perceive me as a follower. You know, I used Danny as a shield. Those were all accurate things. And, you know, it did just seem like, I mean, what could Heidi have said? Is there anything Heidi could have said in that jury phase?
I don't think so. I will say that if I was going to say that there was anything that I thought that Heidi could have improved on, I felt like that Heidi, I think you want to tell a story. And I feel like that Heidi's story was a little hard to follow in terms of like, I came into the game and I was a strategist and then, and then you all thought I was a strategist, but then I wasn't as much of a strategist because then things weren't, but then I wanted to show that I still had a strategy. Like, I just feel like it wasn't in the form of a story as much as I think that people could wrap their head around. But I think that it was, you know, she was fighting a losing battle. I think she made some really good points. And again, up against somebody who wasn't Jam, like maybe that plays better.
Yeah. I mean, Jam Jam did great too. We can't take away from that. Jam Jam did a real, and like, two of my favorite answers, maybe like, you know, they were like, how did you use Carson? And he was like, you know, I used Carson to get info. Oh, but by the way, I used all of you to get info. You know, he like took the question from a very narrow thing and turned it into his overall game perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, like I did use Carson and, you know, a lot of people would just end it there. You know, like maybe they'd like minimize Carson's role by playing up their own role. But instead, Jam Jam didn't minimize Carson's role. He said, you know, he did say, I used him to get information. And then like, but all of us, you know, this was my role throughout my game plan throughout the whole game. And then the thing about like using the sparkle in people's eyes, you know, was such a great and such a like something I've never heard before. Such an interesting way of how like his deep social connections with these people was translating into great strategic reads. Like, truly one of like the all-time answers. And like now it's like, what a great, like, God, I wish I'd heard that before I went out and played Survivor. Like I would have been like focusing on people's eye sparkle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I just think it's the kind of thing you can hear that, but it doesn't necessarily mean you can do that.
Right. But like, it's always these people who have these amazing, you know, like Tony, I remember we talk about his like increasing incredible reads on people that you're right. Like are not something you can't like go out there with like the checklist of how you're going to do the amazing social reads. Like,
Steven, I think that's one of like the really amazing things about like being in this world where, you know, you and I have encountered, I'm probably, and you know, present company included, you know, sometimes, you know, these like amazing players, like they talk to you and you get it. You get misted. Like, it's like, you know,
oh
you talk,
God.
You talk to Suri and it's like, oh yes, yes. You know, and like all of these other players who are just like the all time greats of the social game. Now, not all of them do it all the time, but like when you see it for a minute and like, you know, Parvati or Kim or Tyson, like, you know, you have the conversation with them and then it's just an amazing thing to behold.
I still remember meeting Kim at the One World reunion. And like, you know, you always have your guard up for that very reason with these people, because it's like, you know, that they're all like, and especially right when they get off the show, they're all like, you know, like making super like nice and like charming you. And like, you know, they're like survivor powers are like out of control activating. And like, you know that they're going to be like, you know, like backstabbing you in a conversation for an all-star season. I mean, just, and even in spite of that, Kim just like glowed with charisma. And I was like, tell me more.
Yeah. And Jam, he just has that so much. And I feel it's just oozes off the screen.
Yeah. He oozes in the best way. Mm-hmm. Truly. And, I mean, it was so fun. It's such a fun game, you know, such a fun season to see this extremely unlikely trio that was calling themselves the Misfits, you know, from the beginning, get to the end, you know, be the super strategists of the season, and then ultimately, you know, win conclusively.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Let's talk a little bit about Carson, who we haven't touched on too much. Okay, what do you think about Carson and his journey to the Final Four this season?
Carson was amazing. I mean, like, I think Carson played a really great social game. And I think, you know, we only saw like hints of it, really. It's because it's so hard to capture the, you know, the intricacies of like a really good social game where you have deep bonds and you use those bonds to get information and form strategy and influence votes. Like, that is not a very TV friendly skill, but that is like the hardest.
I will say the one place that it does come across is that the people that are really, really good at it can do it in the confessional, and they're either doing it with the producer or doing it with the viewer at home. And so the people that are the best, then you feel that way about that person. But there are some folks I use Sarah Lucina as an example.
Sarah Lucina is the perfect example.
She has it. She has it with the other people, but she doesn't give it to the camera. She doesn't give it to the producer. So it's sort of like that. It's like, wait, that this person like, but yeah, the people that she wants to do it to, she can do it to. But, you know, the thing about the Tika 3 was that they all had it. They all could do that with, and it came through to the people at home. And my interview with Carson today was great. I mean, he really was, you know, just a delight to talk to as well.
Honestly, like, I was so charmed by like the over the top jury reactions. You know, he wanted so sincerely to like help all three of them, you know, and yes, like it was focused on Carolyn and like, you know, giving Carolyn like the positive reinforcement from, you know, that maybe would encourage her to be her best self. But he gave, you know, Jam great questions. He gave Heidi like super great, positive, like show me your best self questions. And, you know, Jeff said that remark at the end about how the jury really seemed to want to give the contestants an opportunity to be their best selves. And I did like it. I mean, I know there were some people who were like, okay, enough with like the inspiration. And there was a little bit of like, okay, like not everything needs to be inspirational all the time. But like, it also was really nice to like see the jury like actually want to give the contestants an opportunity to.
Did you wish that the Token Teams jury had adopted that philosophy?
I mean, there's so much now about like growth. I feel like, you know, back in 2008, when I was talking about how much I grow and people were like, this is not a game about growth. This is a game about strategy. Now, my God, I would have swept the jury, you know, like, you know, I just, now it's like who's grown and inspired the most. I could have talked about all the, you know, the young media strategists at home, like looking up to me. But I mean, it really did. But just getting back to Carson, like, I think he played, you know, so much along the way. You know, you saw him really being thoughtful about building social bonds and then using those social bonds to get his strategy, to move his strategy forward. And at the same time, it was sincere. He managed that very, very, very difficult feat of like being sincere and being strategic. And we certainly saw, you know, I think all three of the three do that, you know, sometimes to their detriment almost with Jam Jam and that fire making moment, which was, you know, such a beautiful moment too. And I think a lot of people, I saw people, even people who were not rooting for Jam Jam were saying like after that, they kind of were, you know, because of how touching that was.
Yeah, I had really been wondering, like, oh, is this a move from Jam Jam? Does he know that basically, like, Carson's not going to win the fire making, but is he sending Carson to the jury, basically loaded up of like, oh, Jam Jam is a great guy. Now, I listened to the On Fire official Survivor podcast, Jeff Probst. He talked to the final three, and Jeff actually did ask this question, which I thought that it was a good job on the On Fire podcast that the interviews that the final three gave. We're all really good. But they asked Jam Jam a lot about that, because I thought that was kind of a cynical question for Jeff to even ask. I thought that Jeff would be just like completely of the mind, like, no, these people love each other, that he's trying to help him. But, you know, Jeff had wondered of like, okay, was this something, was this a move from Jam Jam? Jam Jam insisted this wasn't a move. This was just his friend that he was trying to help, like going through a thing. And ultimately that's why he was, you know, got so involved with trying to help Carson with the fire.
I mean, his confessional about it was fantastic. It was like, I don't care if it was a good move or a bad move. Like, it was just what I wanted to do, you know, like that's so beautiful, you know, like just like totally discard the premise that it has to be one or the other. I love that. I will say about the On Fire podcast, you know, Jeff was talking like weeks and weeks ago, he was talking about, you know, what made a good audition, and he chose three players to discuss like their auditions. Do you know who those three people were?
Yes, I do. Well, I mean, Jeff loves,
Carson, Franny. I'm sorry, Carson, Jam Jam, and Carolyn.
Yeah. So, you know, Jeff has talked about like the reason why he loves this season so much has been like the gameplay, the Full Tilt Boogie. But I have to say, I don't know if I've necessarily found that to be the case, that the players really went for it in a season unlike on other ones. I think that it's just that it's this cast, I feel like, has been just a cast that like, and you can see why, but that the cast, I think this group, the production really loved this group and this story more so than it was their gameplay that was just like a Full Tilt Boogie.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if there was anything, any move as big as Jesse voting out Cody, you know, last season.
Certainly not. Certainly not. Yeah. Dalton Ross even tweeted last night about how that, like, he can't remember a season with such a likable cast that had like so few like iconic moments.
Yeah. I mean, what were the big moments of this? I mean, honestly, it was like Matt getting evacuated with a rock. It was like Matthew.
I wouldn't have even put that in the as one of the big moments. I mean, I think Danny getting, that was the thing that happened, but was it a moment? You know, I think that Danny, the idol play against Danny, I feel like was a big moment. Even that wasn't necessarily like the decider. It was just like a huge thing that had gone on, but I feel like that it was more stories than moments.
Yeah, I agree. And like big fun characters, and there were a lot of big fun characters, and like little things happened along the way, you know, like, but yeah, not even a lot of them paid off. I mean, you know, Jamie and her fake idol didn't pay off. I mean, it was like a very fun storyline, but it didn't like pay off, you know, and same with, you know, like Matt and his fake idol, Matt playing either Matt and their fake respective fake idols, you know, or, and yeah, I mean, a lot of the stuff, you know, didn't really end up having a huge impact on the flow of the season. I mean, there was good strategy, right? Like there was like the way that the Tika 3 navigated that, you know, war between Sokka and Ratu was elegant.
Yeah. And, like, nice. I mean, I think that that was masterful that they played the two sides against each other and came in with the, you know, the smallest group that was perceived to be the group that had the least power. And they were able to swing back and forth with the different relationships that they had. And so that was, you know, really a job well done. But in terms of like specific big moves that happened, I feel like that it was a lot more smaller, subtle moves, which the show like typically tends to frown upon. But it's like, you know, it's just like this, like some cognitive dissonance, I feel like, of like, see, this is the season we like. And, but it's like, yeah, the season that like had like a lot of like smaller, like, you know, more like, narrative story than necessarily like move.
And nobody really turned on their alliance, you know? I mean, for the most part, right? The Ratus pretty much stayed strong. I mean, Heidi kind of turned on Danny at a certain point, you know, voted for him that one time. But other than that, you know, did anyone really betray their core alliance?
No, I mean, Heidi voted for Danny that one time. And then ultimately Danny just didn't believe that that had happened.
Exactly. Yeah.
Heidi had said that in the jury, they were telling Danny that Heidi voted for him.
He's like, no, it makes no sense.
No, does not. Why would you do that? So, to me, you know, I feel like that this was, just, you know, such a great group, and they let them play, and we should all be happy.
Yeah, exactly. It was a really fun season. I mean, really, really fun season. Great characters. Like truly, I mean, I can't, like, Jam and Carolyn are like no other characters we have. I mean, Carson was a great character, but he actually is like other characters we've seen before. You know, he's in a model that we're familiar with. Mm-hmm. He was a great version of that model, but like Carolyn, especially, you know, such a breakout character who really, you know, owned, you know, I mean, again, like, this, is there anything for that person to do, you know, for that person who is Carolyn, who's like, I want to be authentically emotional and authentically strategic. Like, is that always going to flame out in the jury? Are they always going to see the emotional side of that person more than the strategic side?
But I feel like that we've established that the jury doesn't really care about the strategic side of, right. Like, I feel right. Like that the emotional versus the strategic, I feel, and again, we'd have to like probably talk to the jury. And again, I don't want to diminish Jam Jam's strategic game, which was good because Franny and Kane pointed to that as being reasons why they voted for him. But I just feel like that having a, you know, the best, a great strategic game is not the end all be all. And when it comes to the Final Tribal Council.
And we've always talked about how there's, I mean, such a overlap, especially between strategic and social games, where it's like, oh, go ahead, sorry.
I was just gonna say that going back to Jam Jam, that and you commented on this last week, that I just felt like that he was such a like Goldilocks of that. Yes, he had this off the chart social game, but he also like he had the strategy, and also he was able to have the emotionality. So like he was able to do all of the things.
Yeah. And really, I mean, like, it was interesting though, when Kane said, like, Jam Jam destroyed my game because he integrated himself so well within my alliance. You know, we saw a little bit of that, like those relationships that Jam Jam was building that ended up, you know, and Carson, of course, like, was, you know, swapped onto Ratu. So he had some of those relationships too. But it was interesting that Kane, I mean, I guess he was only talking about the final three, but he cited Jam Jam as doing that as well. So yeah, I mean, what a great skill for Jam Jam, but it truly, so much of that had to be, you know, was his charm, right? It's just like his charm. Like you want to work with the people who you like working with, you know? And I think Jam Jam did such a good job of, and he was always great at diffusing the awkward moment or the aside that could have derailed, you know, like, oh, I thought, you know, like when Carolyn says like, well, they did vote for you at the beginning. And so I thought that was because I was so pretty, you know, like he always kind of could like diffuse those like potentially awkward moments.
Yeah. He was so great at all of that, and like didn't let things fester, was able to like work things out, you know, that he was like the Carolyn whisperer, and she got him, and it was just like a, you know, just a match made in heaven. It is wild. Carolyn mentioned this at the Final Tribal Council, that it's really incredible that they put them on the same tribe together.
Truly. I mean, I do think they do that sometimes. They want like this, like they get like the bigger, like, I mean, you know, I think there's like tribes where like they put like, cause like those personalities are going to be likelier to clash, you know, mm-hmm. or to create, you know, good chemistry, just something kinetic is going to happen, you know, where like, I mean, because everything goes back to token genes, like, you know, on my tribe, we were all like pretty level headed, but then you look at like, and they put all the crazies on the other tribe, you know, like they had Coach and Sierra Reed and Tyson and Candace, mm-hmm. You know, it was much bigger personalities for the most part. And there's I do think there's a little bit of that like they're actually inclined to have like, you know, put the crazies together.
Okay. This is a question from Daniel, who says, did Jam Jam break the poop curse where players are immediately voted out if they're shown to be talking about anything bathroom related?
I didn't know this was a curse. Yeah. That's very funny.
It's the person who coined severe gastrointestinal distress.
Wow. Was that the end for me? I guess it was. That was maybe my last episode. My gosh.
Yes. Jam Jam said he couldn't wait. Now he said he was looking forward to it. He had not done it.
So it wasn't stress. But Bruce was looking forward to it too. You know, Bruce kind of guy. True. He had not done it. He had not done it either.
That's true.
Oh, that's so interesting. I mean, it was a very like physical season with like the burping and mouths and everything. It was mm-hmm. a very like embodied season.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe on a more serious note. Okay. Mackenzie asks, Steven was pretty sure of a Jam Jam victory over Carolyn. Now that the season has ended, what did he see in the edit or the story of the season that led to a Jam Jam win?
I think it was two things for me, or maybe three things we'll say. I mean, first of all, I just felt that there would be this enduring, you know, challenge for Carolyn, where people were always going to maybe discount her a little more, right? Because she played into this archetype, which has historically been discounted in Survivor. You know, it is the older woman, and Carolyn, you know, I think is younger than me, but she was older certainly compared to her this very young season, mm-hmm. and you know, is a mom. And I think like because she was so willing to play emotionally, you know, I think people were always going to see that. I mean, and relatedly, you know, we saw, like I said earlier in the podcast, we saw a lot of people along the way saying that was the Carolyn that they were perceiving, right? That they were seeing, oh, she's so emotional, you know, she's always so out there. And you know, I think when that is the perception of you, that is hard to overcome at the finals. And I think, you know, maybe if she'd come out and been like, here's how I was strategic and here and here and here and here. But like, then people would have thought that there was a cognitive dissonance between the person that they expected and the person who they were seeing. So I think it was that's really my fundamental question. Like, is there something Carolyn could do in, you know, as that person, like, this is who I am. Like, can I ever, you know, can I ever justify?
I do think that there is a path for, and I don't even want to say a Carolyn, because if there is another Carolyn, but somebody who is like identifies with Carolyn, that I just feel like that I think you do need to be a little bit cognitive of who are the other people that you are sitting with at the end, in terms of like, how much overlap does your story of the person who was able to, you know, show their, you know, that side of their personality, but then also still play the game, where Jam Jam is also sitting right there.
Yeah.
And then also is able to like bring in some other things that were in his skill set that Carolyn may not have had.
I mean, you think about Cochran and Dawn, you know, I mean, there's a very good case that Dawn was like the dominant strategist, not the you know, Cochran obviously played an amazing game and he was like the Philip Whisperer. And, but you know, Dawn played a great game too, and she got zero votes, you do think so much of that is like people's, you know, expectations and perceptions of someone in that archetype, you know? Mm-hmm. And the only other thing that maybe, you know, mitigates it or justifies it a little more is, you know, the fact that it did seem like Carson and Jam Jam had more relationships between, mm-hmm. you know, in that group, where they seem to be the ones moving back and forth more. And I think that can backfire, right? We certainly have said that can backfire, but because they were perceived as, I wondered like too, it's like, because there were two of them, you know, because they were the Tika three and Carson and Jam Jam were two. I wonder if that like, you know, inoculated them a little bit from that charge of being flip floppers, you know, because sometimes the person who's like jumps from one alliance to the next alliance is seen as you know, wishy-washy, they're betraying you. But I just like, because it's the trio and because they're considered like a group, and because I do think like coming into the merge down in numbers, mm-hmm. people inherently yeah. always think of you as the underdog.
Well, I think the other thing also is like that it's very relationship based. And when we look back to Gabler in season 43, I think that Gabler was able to point to, I had a thing with you two. I had a thing with you right. two. I had a thing with you two. Whereas right. I think that Carolyn, that her closest relationships were to Carson and Jam Jam. She loved them so much. And then ultimately she had a relationship with Franny. Right. But I feel like that in terms of like Carolyn's close relationships, I feel like that that was about it. I feel like that Carolyn didn't really cultivate a strong game relationship with Danny, Heidi, Lauren, Jamie, a lot of the other players that went deeper into the merge, whereas Carson really did own the relationship with Lauren and with Brandon. Jam Jam also, that he was very tight with Jamie. He had a relationship or an understanding with Heidi. And so I feel like that the other two people from Tika did have their like feelers out to some of the other pieces that were on the that seemed to be in control, whereas Carolyn was not really a trusted ally of any of the people from the other alliances, with the exception of Franny.
Yeah, I think that's right. I absolutely would not have been surprised at a Carolyn win. You know, I mean, we certainly saw it. We saw so many big reactions from every time Carolyn spoke. You know, they always cut to Franny being like, you know, like, or like cheering
Franny
her on.
Franny was
or
really something. Good on the jury.
Yeah, she was a great juror. But ultimately, that did not translate into actual votes. But I would not have been surprised. I mean, you could certainly see a world where, you know, the jury was so taken with Carolyn and how she was able to be honest and strategic at the same time. And yeah. that they wanted to, you know, I mean, this was not this world.
Steven, Regis Sue, one of the great Twitter accounts, says, do you think that the open forum final tribal council is part of the reason we keep getting these 7-1-0 votes? Don't we miss the jurors each getting their own moment? I mean, it is pretty interesting that we have seen the same final tribal council vote count, 7-1-0, for 4 seasons in a row.
But was that not also kind of happening in the old era? Like, I mean, like it was, you know, there's always at the final three, there was one person shut out, one person who got like a handful. I mean, there were like a couple of like, I mean, obviously like, you know, Dom and Wendell was a nail biter. Mm-hmm. But like, I feel like most of the votes recently have been blowouts. Like, haven't they? I mean, what is the other like closely contested vote that, you know, is in the...
I don't think that there's
Gavin
been,
got a handful of votes, but he only
was,
like,
I think that
three?
Was like 9-4.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Gavin tribal council. Yeah. And so, I don't even know. Did Dean get 2 votes?
Dean did. Yeah, exactly. No, I think, I mean, like people are getting a handful, but it's still blowouts. And mm-hmm. So I don't know if you can blame.
I think that Mike White got 3 votes.
Well, I guess those are all more than one.
Those are all more than one. But yeah, I don't know. It is weird that the 7-1-0 vote keeps coming up. But I think that the show doesn't seem to mind. I think that Jeff was asked about this in terms of a final 2 versus a final 3. And because that they felt like, OK, well, if we do a final 2, it could get lopsided. But it's already lopsided with the final 3. But for whatever reason, this is not a concern for them. I think that they feel like they can edit the final tribal council to look close no matter what happens. I know you don't want to acknowledge season 39, but I do remember sitting there like, oh, I think Nora's got a shot at this.
Well, I remember season 20. I mean, honestly, I remember season 28. I was like, did Wu win? Did Wu just win? Mm-hmm. But the answer was no. I think you're right. And especially with 3 people, there's a little bit more for them, more room for them to create some drama out of it. Speaking of the final tribal vote drama, I did want to apologize to anyone following me on Twitter. I was not even watching the episode last night, but I did really want to immediately share my great prediction tweet from last week, which was becoming more and more accurate. I could see as like the votes were being read. And so I was looking on Twitter for when they announced the winner, like hoping it would be Jam Jam, because A, I was rooting for Jam Jam, and B, that's who I had predicted. And apparently there was this thing that I didn't even know about, where there was like Canada was airing at 10 minutes early. So I was seeing people like announce Jam Jam 1. So I was like, great. Like I'll announce Jam Jam 1. Congrats, Jam Jam. I spoiled like a lot of followers.
I know it's hard.
I feel really bad about that. I apologize.
There's a lot going on where that, you know, you want it, you're following it live or is like, or on Twitter. And then, you know, the thing happens. And then, you know, if you don't like, congratulate the winner, then the people will read into like, oh, you didn't congratulate the winner. Oh, I guess you have to probably the winner. And so you want to sort of like get out in front of that. But then there's lots of people that no matter what you tweet, that then they, oh, you ruined it for like, well, like I do kind of feel like, well, why, like, you know,
I don't feel bad ruining it if it's like timed with the telecast, you know, like that's on you.
Right.
But like, because it was ahead of the telecast.
Yeah, and Marianne had commented on that. Steven, I got a lot of negative tweets my direction after Heidi won the fire making. I tweeted out Heidi just won Survivor 43.
I thought that was a very funny tweet.
That was the tweet. And I saw that tweet. People like, oh, you ruined it for me. Thanks a lot. You ruined it. I guess I'm not even going to watch it now because you just ruined it for me. And I guess that maybe you could argue like, hey, I'm not watching this right now, but by the subtext of your tweet, I can tell Heidi just made the final four fire, but I don't think anybody was saying that. Yeah, I think a lot of people were saying like, okay, you have just actively spoiled me on the season that I am watching right now. And people were big mad about that. I also had somebody was like, oh yeah, thanks a lot about like you here, you're out here live tweeting like it's the Super Bowl or something. I'm like, this is my Super Bowl.
Isn't the Super Bowl is also your Super Bowl, right? Like you like the Super Bowl.
I like the Super Bowl. Yeah. But you know, like
baseball. So,
is the Super Bowl baseball?
No, it's a show.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that was a big one as well. People were, you know, very, very, very upset with me about that.
Yeah, that's on you. I mean, like that, like if they're, you know, but especially if you're hashtagging your tweet Survivor, which I'm sure you are, that's like then someone can just mute the Survivor hashtag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Twitter is wild, but you know, I think it's the finale night. We got to be out there.
Yeah, yeah. It's fun. It's like a big celebration. It's a carnival.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Things get hairy out there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Steven, what else about Survivor 44? Do you want to just make sure that punctuate that what season we're on?
Drop the four, carry the four. Drop the four, keep the four. Right. It was very fun. Very fun season. Especially
what about the after show?
So people were saying, you know, Carolyn seemed stunned, you know, just lost, you know, just shut out, end the after show. I don't hate the after show. I do think it would be nice. I miss the extra perspective. You know,
yes.
I love seeing the people all dressed up.
I thought this was the best one.
Yeah. Why do you say that? I agree with you. Why do you say that?
I just thought it was a lot more fun. I feel like it was a lot less about like, tell me, like, what is it like? Like, tell me about this game. Like, tell me about the new era, right? It's really crazy, right? Like, there was like because I feel like that maybe this cast had like more things to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was very fun. I mean, it was very like high energy. They seemed to all like each other. Like, they clearly were having a lot of fun. It was a fun cast. It was a fun group, you know. Jam Jam feels like a great winner. I don't think like anyone is going to, and you know, also too, like not to talk about the edit, but I do feel like the past, this is apparently my bit where I say like, not to talk about the edit and then proceed to talk about the edit for,
that's
but
fine.
As long as
season's over,
I do think for the past three seasons, like they have been trying to hide the winner a little more, sometimes in plain sight, sometimes in less plain sight. And for this season, I feel like we saw more of Jam Jam. You know, you could be like, okay, I totally get it. You know, Frank, I think, and so I think like we, the viewers, have been reeling, and you know, we, even if you're rooting for Marianne, like it was still like a surprising edit for her, right? And certainly for Erica.
Well, for Marianne, I feel like that she was like a big personality all the way through. But right. I feel like that in terms of like her having agency strategically over the game, like that was like a little bit of a surprise towards the end of the game.
Yeah. But with Jam Jam, it's like, okay. Yeah. Like I get that. Like let's, and there's a little bit like less kind of like what just happened? You know what I mean? I think with like, especially with Erica and I think Gabler, there was a little bit of like a sense of like, what am I watching? Like, excuse me. Mm-hmm. But I think here it was a really satisfying, and I liked that they were kind of reacting against these really heavy handed winter edits, like with like Tommy and like Wendell, where you like, you knew from episode one who was winning the show. You know, you literally could guess because they had like that single confessional about, you know, here's what my job is and here's how I'm going to relate it to being a great survivor player. Like, oh, guess that person's winning. And then they would. And it was like frustrating, you know, frustrating, but extremely fun, I think, to like be completely misled. But maybe some people found that more frustrating than fun. And with Jam Jam, I do feel like they struck a nice compromise where like, hey, there's a big character, like, maybe he won one, you know, and then he did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also think a lot of it also still has to do with what the players themselves are giving production, because I do feel like that if players are doing a great job of describing their game and giving them like great sound bites but like they're not going to cut off their nose to spite their face of a person who had great confessionals, and that they're going to try to go out of their way to bury those confessionals, to try to hide the winner. Like I do believe production when they say stuff like that. Why would they do that? It makes no sense.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. We don't, but like, you know, with Erica and Heather, it's crazy that we didn't have like one confessional about sure. their friendship developing. Like sure. that was like the longest relationship of the season, you know, mm-hmm. and the most enduring, you know, and it ended up not. So that I mean, you know, regardless of how bad that confessional was, like, you know, something.
But either it's possible that they were not asked about that on the beach, which it's possible that, you know, with everything, you know, this, who knows, like, what the production, like, was like for Survivor right. 41 coming back right. first season after right. the pandemic and whatever sort of, like, rules that they had going on with COVID. It's like, who knows? But either they didn't say it or nobody thought to ask them.
Yeah. Right. That's certainly possible. Who mm-hmm. knows?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or there was too much else going on.
Yeah. It was very fun. It was actually, I mean, what's your ranking for the,
oh, good. I haven't done this yet. Okay.
Yeah. For the 40s.
Boy, I think that for me, I haven't ever made the call between 44 and 42 yet.
That's a tough
and it's
call.
I feel like I need like the dust to settle, but I'm going to say overall, I think 44. I think 44 is the best season of the new era. I think I have to say that and be consistent about it, because especially that the second half of the game is like really all over the place in 42. In terms of, we had normal survivor votes from final 10 all the way through final 5. So for me, there's a lot of weirdness in the beginning, in the pre-merge of Survivor 44, but I think that ultimately they ended up being able to pull out of a nosedive. I go 44, 42, 43, big drop off, 41.
Yeah, well,
41 is the worst season of the new era.
Really worse than 4, because we, you know, at the time we were talking about how much we love the 41 cast. You know, I do feel like 41 is like pale,
and we like them individually, but I just feel like that as a group, I feel like that they never gelled.
There was a lot of very fun pre-merge stuff, especially on the tribe with Shan and Brad and mm-hmm. JD.
Ricard.
Like that was a very Ricard. Yeah, that was a very fun tribe. I think personally, I would probably put 41 above 43. Mm-hmm. I did find 43 a little bit boring. I mean, 41 is like, yeah, I mean, that is Nasir. Yeah, I mean, there's something like really, really great, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. I understand that people were not satisfied with Gabler as the winner of Survivor 43, but I feel like that there were, you know, I enjoy that group. And I feel like that in terms of like round by round, I do think that there were interesting things going on. So I do feel like that Survivor in the new era, I think it is. I think they came back in 41. They were like, we're going to try a bunch of stuff. And I think that by the end of this, I am optimistic about the direction of Survivor, that I feel like that they've sort of like gotten some of like the really wild ideas maybe out of the way, and maybe hopefully have sort of like settled in a little bit of like, okay, we're still going to try some stuff, but at the end of the day, we know what we're trying to do here in the new era.
Yeah.
Knock on wood.
Yeah. I just felt with 43, there's a lot like the Dwight vote kind of came out of nowhere. Like there was just like a lot of like, wait, what just happened? Like, why did they do that? You know, like sort of like unexplained votes which also is somewhat a hallmark of some of these, some of these new era decisions.
Yeah. I think that is a product of like, sort of like these really big, groups still at the merge. I feel like that hopefully 90 minute episodes will help with trying to explain, somehow like when 12 people come together and something just comes up out of nowhere, like that Dwight vote, seemingly where a group of seven that we never saw together voted out Dwight. That's a great segue to talk about Survivor 45. We saw a quick preview last night. Anything catch your eye about Survivor 45, Steven?
No. Mm-hmm. tell me what should have caught my eye.
Were you pumped up to see Bruce back?
I was pumped up to see Bruce. That was very exciting. He seemed pumped up to be there. I mean, my gosh, Bruce has so much energy. It's really great.
That Bruce's claim to fame is that he's just like, ah, he's like a modern day Rupert. He's like, he's pumped. He was a little too pumped up. I think that the issue for Bruce in Survivor 44 was he had a shirt that was too tight and he went to go dive under the thing but he had, I think, a sufficiently baggy shirt.
Oh, I didn't know Bruce the tight shirt was part of it. Like the tight shirt was like constricting his
Bruce
jump.
Is ready to go.
Like
Steven, but isn't this wild that way back when Bruce was on the tribe with Jam Jam and Carson and Carolyn?
Yeah. Well, there was like I saw like someone was like, there was like a, we're going to bring it home for you, Bruce. You know, someone said that as Bruce was leaving, and they did.
They did. They carried it on for Bruce. How do you think this season goes if Bruce sticks around? Because I feel like that he is, while he is doing a lot of screaming, like he doesn't seem like that he is like a wacky character, like Jam Jam and Carolyn and Carson.
Yeah. Do you think he's going to be a target as like, does he reveal his returnee status?
So Survivor 45 players will have seen him.
Of course.
Yes. Yeah. They saw like the first like six episodes or so of this season. So they did see him go out. They did see Jeff Probst announce that he was going to be a returnee. And so they will fully know who Bruce was.
What a fun wrinkle.
And they'll like, be like, Bruce, what's Carolyn like?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, like, you're gonna be.
Yeah, will you tell Carolyn about us?
Yeah, that's very fun. Yeah, no, I'm very excited. Brandon Donlan, who apparently he's a big figure.
I've heard of him.
Yeah. I went back and looked at my Facebook messages. He was messaging me when I was in Token Jeans. He must have been like 12, about how I was robbed. So, I'm a fan, I guess. Yeah.
Okay.
Nice messages from him.
Mm-hmm. You didn't know his grandfather, did you?
I did not. Okay. I guess I'm probably old enough to be his grandfather.
Yeah. All right, Steven. All right. I know we're on a tight schedule today. I've got to interview Lauren coming up here in just a little bit. So anything else that you want to get out of the way here before our long Survivor break?
Oh, my gosh. I'm going back into my cryogenic freeze. Mm-hmm. Rob, it's been such a pleasure. It's always a pleasure. It's so fun talking to you. It's the best part of the Survivor season is getting to talk with you about it.
The feeling is mutual. And Steven, that you already committed to Survivor 45. That was binding.
The 90-minute episodes. 90-minute episodes. I was like, I'm sure that'll be great for the show, but not great for my insomnia.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll do what we can. And I hope that we can come up with some things to talk about over the summer.
That'll be fun. What should we talk about? The Genius season 3?
Maybe. That is an idea. Is there anything else in particular that you're watching?
Jeopardy? Very upset about the recent streak winner being eliminated. You know, that was upsetting to me. I felt like, he wasn't technically robbed, but I feel like he was robbed because I'm mad about it. And I want to blame someone other than him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I know you are pumped up, but you love the challenge. So there'll be another challenge USA season coming.
Do people, I haven't watched the last one. Do people like it? The last like challenge, the All-Star World.
I think that I heard some good things about it. But I'm talking about the CBS edition.
I know, but there's just so many of them. I'm like starting to love it less. Cause it's like, they're like taking my love and like diffusing it across multiple people. You know?
Okay.
Hopefully that doesn't happen when I have another kid. To love each person in the family less as the love gets diffused.
No,
is that what happened?
No, love is endless. It is a renewable power source.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Stephen. Well, job well done.
No, to you, Rob. Congratulations to you on a job. Well, I mean, my gosh, like how many podcasts have you done this season?
This season, too many to count. What, 5-6 a week about Survivor for 13 weeks, something like that. So who's counting? Who's counting? Yeah. Come on. Yeah. All right. Be on the lookout for the rest of our exit interviews. Thank you so much. And of course, that I'm also going to chat with the patrons later on today. So if you want to be a part of that conversation, we'll be doing our patron happy hour, I think at 5:00 today, Eastern time. You could not too late to jump on in. robinsatwebsite.com/patron for that. I appreciate all the support that we've gotten over the course of this season. Thank you so much. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.